This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao. In just 3 weeks, UNC Chapel Hill will reopen to students. Other schools in the UNC system will follow suit, opening campuses later in the month. Though the system has announced some of its strategies for social distancing and minimizing community spread of COVID-19, many students, faculty, and staff remain worried about their safety. Campuses are preparing to welcome thousands of students back for the fall semester. The UNC Board of Governors is also worried over COVID-19's long-term financial impact. Board Chairman Randall Ramsey has requested that all 17 campuses in the UNC system plan for the worst-case scenario by preparing proposals to cut operating budgets 25% to 50%. Here with us to discuss the potential budget cuts and more is WUNC education reporter Liz Schlemmer. Liz, welcome back.
Hi, Anita. Glad to be here.
So 50% budget cuts, that is a really dramatic number. Tell me what is behind that request.
Well, I think we have yet to see exactly whether those budget cuts are going to be realistic. But right now, the UNC system has asked chancellors to plan for the worst. So 25 to 50% budget cuts. It's normal for universities to have to do contingency plans to look forward and think about what might happen if, say, there are state budget cuts affecting the universities. But this is asking for much more extreme planning and also much more specific.
And what is the rationale behind asking for this planning and asking for the planning regarding that large of a budget cut?
In that email, Chair Ramsey says that the UNC Board of Governors is going to make the final decision about how campuses are going to reopen in the fall. So it sounds like there's a possibility that they could be talking about other options, and they want to get these numbers in hand to think about what would it mean if campuses did go entirely online in the fall. And while it's normal for them to do this kind of planning, I think the message here is universities, you need to be planning for the worst possible scenario and not be looking at the rosier numbers. And so that includes looking at whether, you know, what happens if fall sports have to be canceled? What happens if enrollment numbers are not what you're expecting? And what happens if hospitalizations in North Carolina hit highs that we haven't seen yet, and say, what if the governor makes an executive order affecting universities? So they're really saying we need all the numbers for the possibility of the situation changing later on. I talked to a member of the Board of Governors who said he doesn't know of any imminent plans to actually enact budget cuts like this, but, you know, universities are being asked to have those plans on hand in case the situation arises.
So as universities are thinking about this and preparing, they're looking at the information they know and looking at a lot of information that they don't know. But what they do know a little bit about is enrollment and what enrollment trends are going to look like for this fall. So what do we know so far about that, about the number of students that are coming back and coming to UNC system campuses?
These numbers are still changing, and I think that's really important to note. Fall enrollment, the final enrollment counts are not going to be available until universities do their fall censuses. So that's, you know, a week into the semester, they'll look around and count who has actually showed up. But I have heard from a couple of universities. I talked to the head of undergraduate students at UNCG who said, you know, so far they're looking really good, and he doesn't expect enrollment to be hit by more than, say, about 2%. And UNC Wilmington administrators also sent a letter to faculty and staff saying that they feel pretty good about their financial situation. They don't think enrollment has been greatly impacted. But those things could change quickly, say, if fall sports are canceled. I mean, we already know that the MEAC conference has canceled fall sports indefinitely. If that happens to more universities, you know, that could affect which student athletes want to come back. If anything changes and more classes are put on a remote schedule, that could affect whether students want to come back. So I think there's just this sense that those numbers could still very much be in flux.
And when we talk about students enrolling and coming back to campuses, are they coming back to classes in person? Are they coming back to do things online? What do we know about how they will be learning this fall?
Well, it's certainly a mix. I mean, there's going to be a lot of hybrid classes going on, meaning that they might not meet in person as frequently as they normally would, maybe only once a week instead of two or three times a week. There are going to be online options, some classes that are taught online. Again, at UNCG, when I talked to an administrator there, he said, you know, they've got a website that students can go to and they can click and say, yes, I want an online-only schedule. And then their administrators will reach out to that student and help them create an online option for their schedule. It might not mean that they get to take every class that they wanted to in an online version, but they will be directed towards classes that help advance their degrees and are online. So it's going to be very much a mix, and depending on the circumstances for different students and whether they're able to be on campus, because, of course, many international students may not even be able to get into the country.
In terms of returning to campus generally for faculty and staff, have you heard about any other concerns? I'm thinking about testing, face masks, what happens if there is an outbreak? Have there been plans made for all of these various scenarios?
Oh, there were so many questions out there. There are so many fears, and I know that you'll hear this later on today in this show when you talk to staff. There are so many questions out there, and I think one of the big issues in all of this reopening planning is that communication from administrators, from decision makers to faculty, staff, and students. I think the clear directions from the UNC system and from their health advisors is that masks are crucial. That's really what so much of these reopening plans are based on, is the fact that people are going to be wearing masks. It's one of the best defenses. So I've heard various questions around mask enforcement. One thing I heard today, I was listening to the UNC Chapel Hill Employee Forum's Executive Committee, and they asked about enforcement. It looks like now the university is saying that there will be an enforcement mechanism if, say, a staff member repeatedly refuses to wear a mask, so that there can be disciplinary actions around that. I think another really big question that I hear is, how are we going to know if there's an outbreak, or how will a university community member know if they are at risk of exposure? And so the UNC system advice on testing and tracing is that community members, students, faculty are not going to be universally tested when they come back. Like, we're seeing that at Duke University. They're making an effort to test everyone before they come back. At UNC system schools, people are not going to be tested just upon arrival. And the justification for that is that even if you are tested, it's really only one moment in time. It could give you a false sense of security and might cause you to not wear your mask very much if you test negative. And instead, they want everyone to be on alert at all times. So people are going to be tested when they are showing symptoms or when they have had direct maskless contact with someone who has tested positive. So rather than saying, hey, there's been an outbreak in this particular classroom building, students, faculty, staff are going to be told on kind of a need-to-know basis that, yes, you have been exposed to someone who was not wearing a mask or when you were not wearing a mask and they have tested positive, rather than broadcasting information broadly about outbreaks and where they're occurring.
So there's so many logistical details to figure out with this in terms of respecting people's privacy, minimizing community spread, making sure people feel safe. And there are a number of people that have just said, we have a lot of concerns and we're not really sure that reopening in the way that the system is planned to do is the right thing. And there was a letter that was submitted to the Board of Governors in advance of their meeting today by UNC Chapel Hill faculty chair Mimi Chapman, voicing some of those concerns. Could you tell me a bit about the contents of that letter?
Yeah, I think that one of her major points here is that she wants university administrators to be making the final call on how their campuses will reopen. As we saw in that letter from Chair Randy Ramsey, he was saying that the UNC system, so the system president, who will soon be Peter Hans, and the and the Board of Governors is going to make that decision. And she's really advocating for more local control for universities to make those ultimate decisions. And some of the things that, some of the kind of evidence and arguments that she's making this to is that, hey, look, UNC Chapel Hill had this roadmap on how they were going to reopen, but that was based on premises that have changed. Right. The situation for COVID-19 North Carolina looked very different a couple months ago. And we thought that there was going to be a stall over the summer. We thought that things were going to get better during summer months. And instead, you know, our curve has only gone up. So she's really advocating for the new situation to be taken into account and for universities to get to make their final call on what their campuses look like.
Liz Schlimmer is WUNC's education reporter. Liz, thanks so much.
Thanks, Anita. You're welcome.
As students prepare to return to shared indoor spaces like dorms, cafeterias, and athletic centers, they'll be relying on university workers to keep those enclosed areas sanitized and safe. But who can those workers rely on to keep themselves protected from harm while they're carrying out their daily duties? Housekeepers and groundskeepers face increased risk on college campuses as they come into contact with surfaces and substances that may be contaminated. This fall's reopening of housing and in-person classes across the UNC system could heighten that risk even more. With us to discuss their work at UNC is Germany Alston. Germany is a housekeeper at UNC Chapel Hill's campus. Germany, welcome to The State of Things.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. David Brannigan is also with us. He is a groundskeeper at UNC Chapel Hill. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We reached out to UNC Chapel Hill's campus health director. He was unavailable to join us, but we did receive the following statement from Becky Mangini, vice chancellor for human resources and equal opportunity and compliance. Quote, we acknowledge and hear our employees' concerns. We are incorporating feedback from our campus community, including our valued staff, in our planning for the fall semester. We will continue to work together to address their concerns. Quote. Germany, I'd love to start with you. You've been at UNC for about 5 years. Tell me about the areas of campus that you work on and what some of your responsibilities are.
Yes, I've been there for 5 years. I was a temp for two, and then I became permanent for the remainder. And I have been in areas where you clean the dorm rooms, like Teague, Parker, Carmichael, and basically what I do is I clean the restrooms during the school years, and then when the students are gone for the summer, then we go in to clean their rooms for the campus they come in.
Got it. So you're cleaning various spaces throughout campus. You mentioned a couple of dorms that are mid-campus, north and south. Mm-hmm. David, you've been at UNC for more than 15 years working as a groundskeeper. I would love to know about the work of groundskeepers on UNC's campus and how that changed with COVID-19.
The grounds people that I work with, we maintain the central part of campus, the historic campus. And we cut the grass, prune shrubbery, plant new beds and everything, and just generally keep the campus looking as nice as the country knows our campus to be. One of our areas of concern, of course, is that we interact with the students when they change classes all the time. So we are very concerned that whatever measures may be taken inside, we're exposed on the outside when the classes change and there are thousands of students all at once walking across campus. So while we're doing our work outside, we have to be cognizant of the fact that there are, you know, lots and lots of students around us. So if there's an issue with infections and COVID and things like that, we're going to be in very close proximity to lots and lots of students, and that's a concern.
What kind of protections have been in place for groundskeepers since COVID-19 began for those who have been on campus? I know you haven't been, but you've been talking with fellow coworkers.
Yeah, I'm one of the employees, and this is an important point. I'm one of the employees that has been sent home when the students didn't come back after the spring break. And obviously, I can't maintain the campus from my home. So I'm one of the people that got sent home. And the people that were selected to be the people that would stay on campus and provide a skeleton crew, that selection was made in a completely arbitrary way, an ad hoc way. And so some people were told you have to stay on campus, and other people were told you were to go home.
And you were sent home because of pre-existing conditions, some health conditions?
I would imagine that that's my supervisor and manager's perception. I was not actually asked. It was just literally, as far as I understand, they were told to send everybody home, keep a certain amount of people on campus. And so the supervisors and the manager, the superintendent of grounds, because they probably had no other advice or instruction on how to proceed, just arbitrarily went through the list of names and tried to figure out who would be most viable to be asked to stay on campus. And obviously some of the criteria are health conditions, childcare or elder care responsibilities. And those people that have been sent home are now actually only being paid one third of their wages. Their wages have effectively been cut to one third. And so that seems extremely unfair, because obviously housekeepers and the like, groundskeepers and some of the tradespeople, it's not our fault that we can't work, and yet we are being punished because we can't telework. The people who are teleworking and lucky enough to be able to do that, they've not lost any income. Yet the lowest paid people on campus, the housekeepers, the groundskeepers and some of the other facilities employees who are the lowest paid on campus, if you have used up all your leave allocations and things like that to try and make up the two-thirds difference of the loss, then now you're basically being paid one-third.
Got it. So there are a couple of specifications under the Families First Coronavirus Response Act based off of you're using the various leave, and then after that, getting a certain percentage of your pay if you're not able to report to campus. So, Germany, tell me about, I know what...
Excuse me, it's not that I can't report to campus. I'm not allowed to. I've been sent home.
Got it.
I have no choice in the matter.
Okay. Germany, when campus closed back in March, what happened for you? And tell me about when you came back.
Okay, well, technically, I'm considered an emergency worker due to that. I was hired 5 years prior. So when we was out, I was able to be out due to that I had small kids. So I was able to get paid due to I was out. But once we came back in June, it stopped. So, and then for the family thing with the coronavirus act they have, I'm not eligible for it because I'm considered an emergency worker.
Got it.
So even if I was not to go to work, I wouldn't get paid for it unless I had time.
So what has work been like since you've been back on campus? What have you been doing?
Basically just making sure that building that I'm working in that that is up to par for when the students come back, cleaning the bathrooms, making sure the rooms is up to par. I was in Parker when the football players were there when they was tested positive, and I had cleaned some of their bathrooms and some of their rooms as well.
So you're talking about how earlier this summer, UNC athletes returned to campus in a couple of phases. Mm-hmm. Football players came back in mid-June, and then they were all tested. They were tested twice, and then it was reported that 37 coaches, staff, and athletes at UNC tested positive for COVID-19. So you said you were cleaning the dorms where some of those athletes were staying. How did you find out about the positive outbreak?
How I found about it, because I had one of my friends called me, and they heard it on the radio.
Okay.
That's the only way we would have known about it, because we heard it on the news, but no faculty, no staff told us anything.
So what happened when you talked to your supervisor about it? How did they respond?
She was shocked too, because she didn't know either. She was just in the red just as well as we were. So she told us, you know, to take cautions and not to go back over there.
So what did you then?
To go get tested, then we can go get tested.
Okay. Did you go get tested?
I did.
Okay. So what have the conversations been like with management about working closely with students? I mean, you had that first encounter this summer. What are the precautions that are being encouraged that you all take as you're cleaning spaces that students are coming in and out of?
All we have to do, they say, is just keep your mask on, wear your gloves, and just wipe off the doors area, like the areas that they touch and stuff like that. That's about it.
Do you feel adequately prepared?
No, because the students that we have there now, they barely wear the mask that they're supposed to wear now. So what makes you think that once everyone come back that they're going to continue to wear the mask? The mask is already hard to breathe out of. So that's defeating the purpose.
I mean, that raises an interesting question. David, I'd love to hear your thoughts. I mean, we know that as of right now, the university does have a mask policy. They have spoken a bit about how it's going to be enforced. They have said that they will provide face masks to students, staff, and faculty free of charge, and they'll replace them as they become damaged and soiled. So groundskeepers will be working outside wearing these masks. In theory, students walking through your area should also be wearing those masks. What have you heard from people on campus about mask wearing, and are there any concerns about the mask policy for the fall?
Yeah, that's one of the main concerns I had right from the beginning, because as I canvassed opinions from people on campus that were still working, one of the questions I was asking was, how is it looking on the mask front? Are people adhering to the protocols in place? And the reports I got back were very disheartening. The supervisors, many of the supervisors themselves, were not adhering to the protocols. And if they don't adhere to it, then the employees won't adhere to any protocols. People were riding still two and three people in trucks, work trucks, which they're not supposed to do, supposed to be one person. So also the other concern is the very climate pertaining to mask wearing. Already on campus, as soon as people started having to wear masks, there's been a culture of mocking people who are wearing masks, and it's creating bad feeling, because those people that understand the protocols and wish to keep other people safe as well as themselves safe are being openly mocked by those who are opposed to mask wearing for various reasons. And I have no confidence that the administration or the facility services HR will actually enforce those rules, because some of the managers and supervisors are flouting those rules already. And so that's one of the big concerns, that people are being mocked actually for wearing masks. And that is not conducive to a safe working environment.
Germany, for you, I mean, as in terms of your interactions with students so far and your experiences working with students in the past, do you feel like students knowing that they should be wearing a mask is enough to keep someone in your position safe? Or what would you want the university to do to make you feel safer?
Give us the proper equipment that we need for our safety, because we can't rely on the students to keep their mask on. It's not possible.
What kind of equipment would that be?
I guess instead of the mask, you can get somebody, you can give like the shield, the whole thing. The mask is hardly, you can barely breathe out of it, and plus it's hot outside.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it's hot. You can't keep it on. We can barely keep our mask on at work. So what makes you think the students going to keep their mask on all day or when they walk past us? They barely do it now. And then they want to complain to the upper people when we don't have on ours, but they don't have on theirs either.
David,
Yeah,
so a shield would help, in addition to other things that would maybe kind of help you navigate heat and those challenges throughout your day. David, there was a virtual town hall meeting last week, and you spoke about how you felt like solutions that were proposed by people at the top are unrealistic for those who are on the ground interfacing with students every day, and that there was very much a class distinction in the kinds of policies that were being considered, people who just really weren't thinking about the experiences of people in other parts of the campus, people of different socioeconomic statuses. Could you expand a bit more on that concern?
Yeah, my concern from that is I've been involved in the employee forum over the years. I'm a former vice chair. And one of the things that I pay attention to is what the employee forum are doing. And as far as I've been able to understand, one of the problems is that the people doing the planning for COVID are not interacting with anybody below management level. And if you don't interact with people below that level, the workers like Germany and people like myself or other grounds workers, if you don't consult with them, then you don't get into the granular details of the actuality on the ground. For instance, the vast majority of students are respectful of the campus landscape, but there are still people who are absolutely oblivious to the fact that we're working hard to make the campus beautiful. They walk through our beds while we're working. Another aspect that highlights the lack of granular detail is Many people in the grounds department and across facility services, they chew tobacco. And that involves the rather gross habit of spitting their tobacco saliva into bottles. And those bottles are always around the truck or in the break room or wherever they might be. That has probably never occurred to anybody in the planning stages, because very few of them, I would wager, chew tobacco. It's the little granular details that they cannot get from managers or supervisors that they haven't got in their planning. And that's partly because the only constituencies that they've engaged with are the faculty. Hmm. And even the faculty, I was watching the faculty meeting yesterday, and one of the journalism professors raised a very pertinent point about Alert Carolina. And he pointed out that there was a mumps outbreak on campus in the early part of the year, and there was an Alert Carolina went out. And so he asked, why do we not have an Alert Carolina system set up for notification of COVID infections? And I listened very intently for Chancellor Guskiewicz's answer. And his answer was, oh, I'm not sure, we'll get back to you on that. And that's what they do when there's a difficult question to answer. They'll always get back to you. They can't answer hard questions face to face because they do not have granular answers down to the street level where people are working and interfacing with students. They haven't spoken to the employee forum. They haven't had any meetings with workers. We could have an open air meeting on Polk Place and set up a public address system so they could talk to us. They could ask us what we think. But there has been very little planning or reaching down. It's all been very hierarchical, and the planning stops at the managerial level. And that leaves lots of gaps where the interaction between students and people in the community of workers is breaking down. That they do not know what's going on. They do not have a realistic impression of how these policies should be framed and how they will manifest them on the ground.
Yeah.
And I agree with Jeremy's point that we have no confidence that students will wear their masks. That is just not going to happen. It's wholly unrealistic. But still, they're forging ahead with those plans with no input from workers, very little input. They haven't taken notice of the various other constituencies like the Graduate Students Organisation, the UE150. They haven't listened to them. They haven't listened to facilities workers. And that's a major problem. The planning is all being done by white-collar, middle-class white people who are high up on the pay scale. And that problem, that failing, will manifest itself in workers possibly dying. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, I want to pause you. I want to pause you there to give a little bit of more time for Germany. So Germany, I mean, you are a mother of three children yourself, and you mentioned earlier kind of concern about exposure. What kind of medical benefits and access do you have?
I have insurance through UNC, so I have good insurance.
Okay, and are you able to get tested if you need to?
Yes. But they told us that we have to go to our physicians to get tested. That they're not doing it through the ACC.
Got it. I only have about a minute left, but I mean, both of you came on the show today. Both of you have spoken out in other forums before, and I wonder how you feel about that. Do you have any fears about speaking out, Germany? Let me start with you.
I mean, in a way, I do. But I mean, you know, stuff got to be heard. You know, we just can't keep sitting there and keep sitting there. Then we end up getting sick, and then. Hey, we out of work. We keep exposing everybody else. It's like, where's the... We care about y'all, so why y'all don't care about us? For our safety.
Yeah. David, I only have about 30 seconds. Do you have any fears about speaking out? And
Personally, I don't. I have a very good supervisor, a very good ground superintendent, and I think I'm confident that I know my rights. I can speak out because I'm protected by the Constitution. Any attempt to chill that effort of free speech, I would meet that vigorously and defend that. So I speak out because other people are too frightened to speak out because of the atmosphere of retaliation and harassment in facilities for those people who are brave enough, like Jeremy, to speak out. This is too serious not to speak out. This is a matter of life and death for employees.
Thank you so much to Germany Alston, a housekeeper at UNC Chapel Hill, and David Brannigan, a groundskeeper at UNC Chapel Hill. Thanks so much to both of you.
You're welcome.
And we did reach out to UNC Chapel Hill's campus health director, who was unavailable to join. We got a statement from a UNC official, and we shared it earlier in this conversation. You can find that on our website, stateofthings.org.